Hello, and welcome to State of Our Workforce Unpacked. My name is Henry Danner, and I'm the Network Manager at the National Fund for Workforce Solutions. Unpacked takes the national conversations from State of Our Workforce and brings them to the ground level, spotlighting how workforce equity shows up in communities across our network. It's where our nationally powered, locally driven ethos comes to life. This month, we're chatting with three leaders behind a powerful new report called Breaking the Chains, Reclaiming Wealth, Power, and Dignity for Black Men. This report challenges the systemic roots of economic exclusion and highlights the ingenuity and resilience of Black men in Chicago. Guests, Matt Bruce, Executive Director of the Chicagoland Workforce Funder Alliance, Dr. Clinton Boyd Jr., Executive Director of Fathers, Families, and Healthy Communities, and Richard Wallace, Executive Director of Equity and Transformation, will help us unpack what they heard from Black men across Chicago, what systems are still failing them, and what a more equitable future could look like when we center community voice and leadership. It's a pleasure to be with you guys, gentlemen. How are you feeling today?
Feeling good.
Great. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, good.
Okay. Awesome. So let's dive right in. I was really excited for this podcast. I read the report. As a Black man myself, it was so many, you know, things that resonated in the report, especially in those recommendations at the end. So I would love to just kind of talk through some of your findings. And first, let's just start with understanding, like, how we got to this point. How did you all come together across research, advocacy, and philanthropy to decide to do this report that elevates the voices of Black men in Chicago, Chi-Town? And, you know, what was the core problem you were seeking to address, and why now? So, Matt, we'll start with you on that question.
Yeah, sure. So the origins of this really go back to our annual Chicagoland Workforce Symposium that we bring together each year. And one of the things we do at the symposium is we often look at the labor market data, like what are the trends showing? And our workforce board made a presentation about those trends. And this is one of the data points that really stuck out. It showed the Black male labor force participation rate really dropping and not coming back up. And it also showed that Chicago was an outlier in this. We looked worse than other cities, worse than other regions. And so it really animated the foundation community to looking at this data point, trying to understand it. We did a lot more quantitative analysis to try to understand, like, what could data show us about that? And we really arrived at a point where we needed qualitative data. The metrics can only get you so far. You really need to talk to the individuals behind the data points to understand what's going on there. And so that led to, you know, reaching out to organizations like EAT and Fathers, Family, Healthy Communities, because they have the trusting relationships and the reputation in these communities to be able to do that kind of quantitative data analysis in a safe way, in a trauma-informed way, a respectful way, to really lift up the voices of these Black men. And so that led to this research.
Thank you. Richard, so I'm going to toss to you for this next question. A key part of this report was engaging formerly incarcerated Black men and Black fathers, excuse me. These conversations gave light to the stories that we rarely hear when we're talking about workforce policy. So I'm curious, what did these men share about the realities that they face, and what do we risk missing when we don't center their voices in designing solutions?
Yeah, thank you for the question. And I also want to thank Matt for, you know, doing the hard work of getting the resources so that we could do this pilot. I think what we miss is, and what we risk is, creating policy solutions that don't match the reality of the communities that many of us serve, right? When workforce development is designed without the input of Black men and fathers, we get job trainings for industries that discriminate against formerly incarcerated people. We get credential programs that aren't recognized by actual employers. We get support services that don't address the real barriers that our folks are experiencing. We also get, like, deficit-based narratives that ignore the strengths that many of the folks that we serve in our communities that they have. Additionally, I think over the years, what I've witnessed is that, you know, we overlook the interconnected nature of the barriers, right? Like, so when I say that, what I'm talking about is that, you know, employment discrimination is connected to housing instability. So if you don't have a job, how can you pay for rent? The child support debt is compounded by reentry challenges. So a father may go to prison and come home and have child care debt, right? Child support debt, but then is applying for jobs and being denied access to employment. And so they can't pay down that debt and take care of their children the ways that they want to, which then also puts them at risk of being rearrested. And that geographic isolation limits job access, right? So if you live in, we consider like, you know, like in Austin, Inglewood, West Garfield Park, those are neighborhoods that we do a lot of our work in. One, they're food deserts, but they're also job deserts. You don't have a lot of ready-made employers in those areas. And so for me, that's what we miss out by not actually going to the people that are most affected and asking them the real questions around, like, you know, what are your barriers? And I am grateful that we had an opportunity to do that and give voice to, I feel like, a community that has historically been marginalized in this city, and they finally got their voices out.
Yeah, that's powerful stuff. And I love the fact that you mentioned kind of operating from a strength-based perspective as opposed to a deficit-based perspective when you're considering all of the skills and experiences that these men bring to the table. So Clinton, I'm going to ask you to talk a little bit about how, even though these men are navigating adversity, they're also using those strengths to build their own paths forward. They're working to find solutions to their own problems. Can you share an example that speaks to the resilience or the innovation that you witnessed while working with these men?
Yeah, well, thank you again for the question. And I also just want to echo something that Richard said with regard to Chicagoland Workforce Funders Alliance and their willingness to, quite frankly, put the money where their mouth is and actually invest in the work needed for us to actually conduct the study, hear from the men and the fathers within the community so we can have a conversation such as the one we're engaged in this moment. And it was also an absolute pleasure to work alongside Rich and his team over at Equity and Transformation, because I often tell folks we can't hold up the sky by ourselves. And it's very important for us to work with like-minded, mission-aligned organizations to move the needle around anything we're doing of true substance when we talk about Black men and Black fathers. Now, coming back to your question, one of the things that, for me, this report really reveals loud and clear is that Black men in Chicago are not waiting to be saved. You know, like they're not waiting for the systems to recognize our worth. You know, we're really building alternative pathways forward, alternative pathways towards power, because the existing ones have really been rigged against us. And that was something that came out loud and clear in the countless conversations we had with the men and fathers who gave their voice to this project. And so, like, again, across every conversation we had, it was really a pattern that emerged that talked about how Black men are creating these freedom economies. These aren't theoretical, like, they're living, breathing systems based on really survival and ingenuity, but this ingenuity is really forged in response to structural abandonment, institutional betrayal, because that was something that we heard loud and clear from the men as well. And so for many of them, they felt that the best thing that they can do for their own livelihood and for the sake of their children and their families and their communities writ large was to launch businesses. Again, not in boardrooms, but in bathrooms, right? In basements, in garages. And so they really were relying on these informal networks that they established. They were forming also like these cooperative networks. And these networks were really based and built on, in my view, trust, talent, and necessity, all of which cannot be understated. And so even when we just think about the innovation and the ingenuity that they're bringing to bear, it's important to note that it's a form of resilience, but resilience should never be the goal. Our men and our fathers are forced to be resilient because the systems continue to fail us. Mm-hmm. And when we, again, just think about what this means for our guys, we really need, and quite frankly, we deserve resources, investments, and policies that are going to really meet our visions for how we want to lead and live our lives with the same type of urgency that comes with other communities that receive similar type of investments. Because it's one thing to have an aspiration, but it's another thing to have access to the resources that will allow you to make that aspiration a reality. And so for me, that was something that I heard loud and clear from the guys. They understand that the system is supposedly created and designed to support all, but unfortunately, they continue to get the short end of the stick. And instead of really waiting on the system to give them what they deserve, they're just going to create and forge these new economic pathways forward.
Man, I feel like we might need to pass the collection plate around, because that was a word. A lot of truth in everything that you all have said so far, but I've heard so much about and read in the report so much about the resilience and not waiting on the system, but also at the same time holding the system accountable for the wrongs that it has done to Black men in Chicago, and putting the system's feet to the fire on what to do to correct some of those wrongdoings. So I want to talk with you all now, just hear all of your voices on this question a little bit more about the recommendations that the report gave towards the end, right? From wealth building strategies to fatherhood investments. And I just want to know from your perspective, what's one shift that you think funders and workforce leaders need to make to move from just talking about equity to actually resourcing it, you know? So how do we take those recommendations from just words on the paper to actual action steps that we can look to and also, again, hold those in power accountable to seeing it through? So whoever would like to start, but I would love to hear from all of you on that one.
Yeah, one of my takeaways from the recommendation is, and to build on something you said, Henry, is that holding the system accountable also includes funders. So like funders, public and private, are part of that system. And one of the biggest aha moments reading this report, and also just the rich conversations with Rich and Clinton and their teams over the course of this project, is reflecting back how in many ways the work system, not just the labor market, but the workforce development system, has also failed these men. And it's part of that broken promise that the traumatic implications of that broken promise that we see with these populations. Workforce development is part of that. So if we are not resourcing workforce development programs well enough to break down those structural racism barriers, then we are contributing to that problem and re-traumatizing this population by failing to meet their needs, failing to enable their success.
Right.
I can jump in as well. I think, you know, things that philanthropy can do and what organize. I mean, I think, you know, we're living in a moment where I think, where we know the racial wealth gap is widening, mm-hmm. right? There was a report that came out that said the net median net worth of Black families in the city of Chicago was zero. You have this report that's out that's talking about the inadequate access to employment for Black men and fathers. And we need to begin to talk about wealth redistribution in a real way. I think that the solutions have to be as bold as the problem, right? And so we can't come at this bold problem with a mediocre solution. Mm-hmm. We actually have to begin to be as bold as the problems are. And so for me, I feel like how we get there is core. I think more work that invests in, you know, organizing on the ground, because, you know, we can do philanthropy and nonprofit organizations can only do so much. it takes the people, mm-hmm. right? It takes the people of the city of Chicago, the people of the state of Illinois to stand up. And now we have the data that we can inform community. But resources need to go to organizing. Resources need to go to the workforce development organizations that are doing the work for real. And we need to really get, and if we're going to be advocating for something, I think things like wealth redistribution, I think pilots like guaranteed income, we need people in the communities to actually have opportunities to experience the alternatives that we vision, right? Like we have a vision of a world where everybody has what they need to survive, right? So let's begin investing in pilots where people can actually experience that, because talk is, you know, people have been hearing the conversations for years. They need to experience it. That's one of the things we're able to do and capture at EAT during the time that we held the Chicago Future Fund, which was our guaranteed income pilot. People understood what guaranteed income was because they had the experience, right? And so more pilots, right? Bold pilots in our community, deeper investment in community organizing, deepened investment into the workforce development sector, and advocacy that actually leads to, you know, true wealth redistribution at the core of it. So those are the pieces I feel like for me that are like, you know, important. Mm-hmm. Lift it up.
Yeah, I don't know what else to add outside of what's already been shared, but I guess I would just reinforce many of the points Matt and Rich made. And one of the big ones for me is that we really need to shift away from this like incremental approach we take to these long-standing, ongoing systemic issues and inequities within our system. And we really need to get to a place where we're not only proposing, but enacting transformational legislation that at its core is really going to eliminate the racial wealth gap that exists between Black Americans and White Americans, primarily because that's where the gap is the starkest. Mm-hmm. I oftentimes think about the racial wealth gap or the wealth inequities that exist in the Black community from this perspective. It's the cumulative intergenerational effect of white supremacy in this country. And so because of that, we need to think about what are those type of bold policies that we can put forth that really allow us to eliminate that gap, because it's really wealth that controls so much of the necessities of life. And so we need to get to a place where we can really build wealth and not just wages. And quite honestly, we need to think about the funding community specifically through the lens of making sure that they just stop investing in what's safe and start investing in what's just. And the just thing to do is to support legislation that really is going to allow us to eliminate the racial wealth gap. And then I would also say, I mean, I lead a fatherhood organization, Invest in Fathers. I'm going to throw that out there as well.
Yes, yes.
And even on that note, I will say that when we think about fatherhood programming, that it's good for us to support these initiatives, but the type of initiatives that we support matter just as well. So that means that we need to have trauma-informed care be a central and critical component of how we work with fathers within the Black community. It also means that the type of curriculum that is used to work with fathers also accounts for the positive attributes of our culture. And because self-knowledge produces self-love, and we need to get to a place where our people can see themselves not exclusively through the lens of racial injustice. Yes, we have been the victims of racial injustice. However, we are so much more than that. And also, our history does not start in 1619 or 1555, depending on which school of camp you subscribe to. Like, we come from a rich, storied history. We have an ancestral lineage that we're connected to, but we don't hear anything about that. And so again, the extent to which we can create educational material that our men also have access to will also allow us to support them in their quest to have the appropriate level of self-love and self-respect. And once they have it, we could really value ourselves in the proper context. And I'm done now. Y'all done got me started.
It's all good. We're winding down the conversation, but man, there's so many gems in what you all just said that I feel like we all are going to need to like listen back to this and just think deeper about them and how we all play a role in this process, right? But thank you all for those responses. So we're gonna close out now. And this question, the last question again, is for all of you, and it's really about the future and just sort of like, well, actually, the right now, but looking towards the future. What gives you all hope in this work? The report is out. I'm sure you've been getting tons of feedback and positive responses about it and people saying right on. But like, what makes you hopeful that all of the work that you put into putting this information out that is going to lead to change or lead to, it's just lead to seeing the situations improve for Black men in Chicago and across the country as well?
I'll jump in. I mean, it's pretty simple, but like the one thing that gives me hope is organizations like these too, and leaders like these, and more that it's indicative that, like, you know, we have solutions here. So like Equity and Transformation they've got the proof that, you know, guaranteed basic income can work. It can be effective. You know, there's another report we'll point you to from that. Clinton's organization, you know, has got the proof that like investing in fathers like works. Like this is, so we have the tools. We know at least some of the solutions we need to implement and follow. We just need the will to actually, to their earlier points, be bold enough to do those things, even though they might feel risky.
I agree. We need that will. I'll jump in. Yeah, I think what brought me some joy, you know, on Juneteenth, the Johnson administration announced the Reparations Task Force here in the city of Chicago. It is essential, right? And that means, and people may not, for all of the folks that may not know, this is important. This is a monumental moment for, you know, Chicago being one of the largest economies in the U.S., right? To actually be having a serious conversation about proposals for reparations, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and I think that a lot of what our report can inform that process, right? Make to ensure that the interventions go deep enough. I think the other thing that gives me joy and gives me hope is the communities we serve. You know, sometimes it feels good. Like when I'll be at my desk feeling miserable and I'll get up and we'll have a data canvas off of Madison and Pulaski. I'm a West Sider. So that's our Gold Coast. Right. And you go out there and you know that our folks in those communities, West Garfield Park, are making about $11,900 a year. Right. That's the average per capita income in West Garfield Park. And they're smiling and they're full of joy. And it just brings you joy. Right. It right sizes you and your issues, because if I could take my issues and be there and be miserable and knowing that those folks have my issues compounded. Right. Mm-hmm. And they're still smiling and they're still fighting and figuring out a way. It gives me hope and gives me resilience to continue to move this work forward, because as long as they're continuing to push, you know, I can continue to push. Right. And so, yeah, those are the pieces that keep me going.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the same thing. The joy that I see in the smiles on the faces of the men who carry with them, yes, pain, but also an enormous amount of promise. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they continue to put one foot in front of the other and walk forward despite the invisible shackles that at times appear to be wrapped around their ankles just lets me know that I have to remain committed to the cause, because they remain committed to moving their lives forward in a direction that is personally meaningful to them. And then I would also say from a hope perspective, I'm a man of faith. So I know what's been promised. And so because I know what's been promised, I just continue to move forward because I know that this will not last forever.
Yeah.
Injustice will not prevail to perpetuity. It just won't. And so when you know that and you feel that, it's like, even if it doesn't happen in my lifetime, I know it's coming in the future. And I'm just glad to be in a position to play my part.
Yeah. Yeah, that's real. That's real. I want to thank you all again for joining us for this conversation. This was amazing. And I know it's going to touch a lot of people. So thank you. So until next time, we'll see you. See you then.
State of Our Workforce Unpacked is a production of the National Fund for Workforce Solutions. This episode was produced by Joshua Enoch. The music in this episode is produced by Alex Productions. You can find past episodes of State of Our Workforce Unpacked on our website at www.nationalfund.org. Be sure to follow the National Fund for Workforce Solutions on LinkedIn to watch live episodes of State of Our Workforce Unpacked. Don't forget to subscribe to State of Our Workforce wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate you tuning in and look forward to bringing you more valuable conversations in the future.